Remember that advocacy is not just about ourselves, but impacts our entire community. And when we take the time to advocate, it makes life better for those who come after us.
It's easy to talk about the successes, but what doesn't get talked about enough is the struggle. My name is Eric Weinmayer. I've gotten the chance to ascend Mount Everest, to climb the tallest mountain in every continent, to kayak the Grand Canyon, and I happen to be blind. It's been a struggle to live what I call a no-barriers life, to define it, to push the parameters of what it means. And part of the equation is diving into the learning process and trying to illuminate the universal elements that exist along the way. And that unexplored terrain between those dark places we find ourselves in the summit exists a map. That map, that way forward, is what we call no barriers.
Habin Girma is an American disability rights advocate and the first deafblind person to graduate from Harvard Law School. President Obama named her a White House Champion of Change. She's received the Helen Keller Achievement Award and secured a spot on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list in 2016. She believes disability is an opportunity for innovation and travels the world teaching the benefits of choosing inclusion. Her memoir, Habin, The Deaf Blind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law, is a captivating read. A review from O Magazine states, "This autobiography by a millennial Helen Keller teems with grace and grit."
Everyone, welcome to our No Barriers podcast. This is Eric Weinmayer, and this is Jeff Evans. We're also broadcasting at the summit, the No Barriers Summit. We're so excited. Some of you, maybe it's your first time listening to our podcast, and we have an amazing guest today. Also, some of you may not know Jeff if it's your first time. Jeff and I have known each other for a long time, and he's one of the few people on earth who knows exactly how to push my buttons and irritate me. But we also love each other like brothers and have put our lives in each other's hands dozens of times. So he's natural host for the podcast and has been a huge part of No Barriers programs over the years. So thanks, Jeff, for being with us as well.
You can just call me button pusher.
I will. Habin, thank you for joining us. And I would like to ask you this first question just to kind of get this out of the way. And that is, being deafblind, how are you communicating with us today? Explain to everyone the cool technology that you're using.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me on the show. So for communication, I am using a Braille computer and keyboard. I'm deafblind and have limited vision and hearing. Most of our world is designed for people who can see and hear. Most of the world is designed for non-disabled people. And disabled people, we have to be creative and thoughtful and come up with solutions as we resist ableism. So as I was growing up, I was asking myself, how can I participate in conversations? How can I be included in class and make friends? And I looked back on my strengths. One of my strengths is my sense of touch. And I started reading Braille in first grade. I've been reading Braille for about most of my life. In 2010, just when I was starting law school, the technology company called Humanware released a new Braille note that had Bluetooth. And that sparked the idea that maybe I could connect a Bluetooth keyboard with a Braille computer and be able to communicate with people real time. I tested that. It was awkward and difficult at first. A lot of people are uncomfortable with difference, but eventually I found more and more people who wanted to be inclusive and wanted to participate. I'm going to hold up the device. So it's a small computer with a line of Braille on the bottom. I run my fingers over the Braille, and it's connected to a keyboard. So as we speak during this conversation, someone's typing what Eric and Button Pusher will be saying, and I'll be responding by voice. Now I have a question for our hosts. Jeff, how do you push Eric's buttons?
All right. Well, do you have siblings, Haven? Do you have siblings?
We're not changing the subject.
No. It's
back
relevant.
To the other question.
I know you're a lawyer, but let me continue with the floor.
Yeah. So don't verbally spar with her. She'll crush you.
It's actually a relevant question. Do you have siblings? Eric and I have known each other for over 25 years, I think. And we've had some of the best and worst moments of our lives together. So just like siblings, you learn over the course of that relationship, how to get the best and sometimes the worst out of those relationships. So
yeah, but that's annoying though, because one annoying thing is that, and I'll just embarrass you right off the bat. Jeff and I did this TV show where we raced across Morocco, and people said, "Eric, you're an inspiration, and your friend is pretty cute." So I get pegged as being the inspiration, and Jeff gets the label of being cute, and I'm like, that is very unfair.
Yeah, I feel like you're...
You don't even know what to say to that, do you? So, Haben, I want to ask you this, because like today was a perfect example. We're setting up this platform to talk to you today, and I find one of the first things is that my JAWS, which is the screen reader, the accessibility program that I use as a blind person, doesn't work with the platform, right? So I have to have my friend with sight come in and help me out. And it just, like, I immediately felt a little bit frustrated. And I wonder, like, how do you stay positive? Do you stay positive? Do you get really frustrated and down sometimes?
Yeah, there are a lot of barriers, especially for us disabled people. And I do get exhausted. There is advocacy fatigue. One thing I do is to make sure I take breaks, make sure you get time to sleep, make sure you get time to eat. There are a lot of people struggling for access to food, especially now during the pandemic. We need to do everything we can to take care of our basic needs. And also, community. Community is really helpful in dealing with advocacy fatigue. Having siblings who support you or button pushers who support you and act cute around you is always helpful in dealing with the frustrations that we encounter. Sometimes it takes time to build up that community. It's tricky to find people who believe in you and can help you remove the barriers when you're too exhausted to remove the barriers yourself. So take the time to find those people. Keep putting yourself out there until you have a community of people who support you. When I was growing up, disability organizations like summer camps for the blind were places where I found a lot of friends who later, when I was frustrated with access barriers, could help cheer me on and empathize when I was struggling.
Yeah. So Haben, what were some of the access issues and barriers that you faced as a young person?
Haben speaking, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. My parents are from Eritrea and Ethiopia. I'm Black, and actually right now in the Bay Area, when we're filming this, there are protests going on because of the police brutality and police killing Black individuals. The ACLU actually did a study and found the vast majority of people killed by the police are people with disabilities. And those of us who fit multiple minority groups, Black and disabled, people of color and disabled, are at greater risks of all kinds of oppression. So that's going on during this filming. And I've been struggling with ableism and racism and sexism because that exists in society. In my book, one of the earliest scenes is regarding ableism in my schools. There's a scene where an instructor tells me that I'm failing class. And I tell the instructor, I've been doing all the work. How could you say I'm failing the class? And the instructor is insistent that I was failing the class. I had a really good teacher, the blind, who sat down with me and asked questions. Did you do all the assignments? I told her yes. How are you getting the assignments? Where are you getting the assignments? We did some investigation and found that the instructor was announcing homework from the back of the room where I couldn't hear him. And he was writing assignments on the board and I couldn't see the assignments. So I was getting punished for assignments that were not accessible to me. That wasn't fair. We talked it over and I decided to take the responsibility of doing the extra work to approach the instructor at the end of each class and ask, was there homework? This was in middle school. It's really, really hard for people in middle school to stand out, let alone advocate for themselves. That was really difficult for me. I pushed through it. I know this happens to a lot of kids with disabilities all over the world, and it's not fair. Schools should do the work to remove barriers rather than putting the burden on students to resist and fight those barriers.
Well, you did learn to advocate for yourself. That was, I imagine, one of your first experiences advocating for yourself. And the result was pretty good. I believe you were valedictorian of your class, right?
High school, I graduated as valedictorian. Middle school, elementary school, let's not talk about my grades.
And also, I'm glad you mentioned your book because we're here to celebrate your book, Hobbin, the blind deaf lawyer who conquered Harvard Law School. So, yeah, we're going to talk more about your book and congratulations, because I know you just finished it recently.
And was that, I'll add on to that, was that process for you writing the book, would you rank it up there as one of the more challenging things that you've ever done? Or were the stories and the messages anecdotal enough for you and so close to your heart that they were easy to write?
Yeah, not too bad getting reviewed by Oprah.
Right.
Nice job.
So lots of really good details to cover. Oprah's magazine included a summary of my book, which was amazing. It was one of the top 10 picks for August. My book, I enjoyed the puzzle of taking personal experiences and then communicating them in a way, writing them down in a way that taught people about ableism. A lot of people don't know what that is. Ableism is the widespread belief that disabled people are inferior to non-disabled people. We're not inferior, but that's the belief that keeps getting spread around. So the stories I wrote, which are anecdotes from my life, everything from fighting a bull to making PB&J to climbing icebergs. Eric, you probably would enjoy climbing icebergs.
Yeah, I'm going to join you on your next iceberg climbing adventure.
Probably teach him a thing or two, Robin.
Yeah, I need some lessons. And following up on that, you have to tell the story about fighting a bull. I got to hear your bullfighting story.
The bullfighting story. So this was in Asmara, Eritrea, Eastern Africa. My family was getting ready for my aunt's wedding. At the wedding, everybody was working because it was like a 3-day full, several hundred people celebration. I was hiding in my room because I don't like cooking, and all the women were in the kitchen cooking. My mother found me and told me, you know what? Disability is no excuse. You need to be able to participate. And I said, it's not a disability issue. It's a gender issue. Once I start cooking in the kitchen, I'm always going to be dragged to the kitchen. What are the men doing? I'll do what the men are doing.
Ooh.
My mom thought about it and then said, okay, follow me. So I followed her. We went out to the street. There was a huge tent and there was a group of people sitting around a table under the tent. My mom approached my uncle and told him, Haben wants to help you. I said, wait a minute. I sniffed the air. There was a strange smell. What are they doing? And my mom told me, they're chopping meat for the stew. I was furious. I advocated. I told her I didn't want to cook. But there I was, back in that situation. So I sat down. I joined the group. There were about 8 people reaching into a center where there was a pile of meat. They'd recently slaughtered a bull. And everyone was chopping it into smaller pieces. I picked up a knife, picked up pieces, and started chopping them into tinier pieces. People around me were laughing, joking. I couldn't hear their words. Deafness is a spectrum. I could hear enough to tell that people were speaking, but I couldn't hear the words. And it was painful to be locked out of conversations and jokes and laughter within my own family. I hate missing out. I hate exclusion. I hate cooking. I put up with it and just continued chopping. Then I felt something strange. I put down my knife and investigated. It was the bull's penis. I was horrified. Well, maybe this was a prank. Maybe they thought because I was a girl that I would just get up and scream and run. I'll show them courage. I picked up my knife. Then one of the guys came over and took the thing away. Ever since then, whenever my mom has asked me to cook, I just told her, remember the bull?
That's awesome. Uh-huh.
I love that.
Well, you've touched on that isolation. And I mean, I find that besides having a disability itself or multiple disabilities, you lose out on the conversation, on the visuals. Yeah, so it is an isolating feeling, right? Like people, I don't think, realize that that is the almost bigger problem than the disability itself, right?
Yeah, and in this specific story, I felt isolation in my own family. I feel like that happens a lot in disability communities. Often we're the only one in our families with a disability, and people around us struggle to understand. Sometimes they do get it. Sometimes they become disability advocates and help dismantle barriers. But other times they continue to struggle. Then there are other layers in other communities, layers of sexism and gendered expectations. Then there's also racism, lowered expectations for people who are Black, people of color. So as we try to build community, make friends, form relationships, there's so many layers that push us to feeling isolated. And now we're in the pandemic and we're experiencing another form of isolation.
How do you fight that isolation? How do you address it, Haben?
The solution is a long-term thing, one friendship at a time. And friendships take time. It's remembering to text someone and check in, trying to make time to meet up for coffee or dancing. I'm a big dancer. I love swing and salsa. And many of my friends I've met around dancing and dance activities.
You learned how to do salsa I think, at camp, right? And seems like dancing is an ongoing theme of this podcast for some reason, because that's one of the ways Jeff pushes my buttons, because I don't have rhythm. And I always feel self-conscious when I dance, because I can't see the way others are doing it. So I can't follow them. So
that's the first time you've ever owned that you don't have rhythm, though. This is progress, Eric.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
I'm maturing.
Maybe Hobbin, who clearly does have rhythm, could take you to a salsa lesson at some point. I think you skip over the iceberg thing and just go straight to salsa.
I will do that. That'll be great when we see each other in person. But so isn't that awkward, being deafblind, when you start trying to learn salsa, because you can't see what other people are doing, and the instructor has to sort of know how to communicate with you in a way that it's clear. You're not like, there are a million questions in your brain in terms of, am I doing it right?
So there are different types of dances. There's dancing to perform for an audience, and that's very visual. And one can feel very self-conscious about other people watching. But then there's also dancing for the connection, where it's not about showing off, but about feeling connected with another dance person. Mm. And that's the kind of dancing I really love. And it's probably the kind of dancing that would be most accessible for Eric. The dance classes I took, the dance instructor, my very first salsa class was with a blind dance instructor. Mm. She started by describing, and then after describing verbally, she allowed us to feel her feet and feel the different movements. When I dance with someone, partner dances, we're connected through our hands and shoulders. I actually can't hear the beat in the music, but I can feel the beat through people's hands and shoulders. And it's about that connection, that joy, that builds community. It's one of the things I missed during the pandemic.
So Jeff, you see, you don't dance to show off. I think Hobbin was speaking directly to you. You dance for connection.
But maybe she's trying to empower you to just forget that people are watching and just be natural, because that's the secret sauce right there. And maybe that would liberate you.
Yeah. There.
But hey, Hobbin, do you, since the pandemic kicked in and dancing is such a wonderful outlet for you, do you dance by yourself at home? Like, since this started, do you put music on and just allow it to flow through you and dance? Or is dancing, do you just simply relate it to that? You said you're very tactile. Do you relate it to that connection that you have with your dance partner, so you can only do it, you know, with a partner?
For me, it's all about the connection. So I don't dance on my own. I suppose I could dance on my own, but I mean, everyone has internal, or a lot of people have internal rhythm and could dance on their own, but I don't really get joy out of that. For me, it's about the connection. So I have not been dancing. I have a guide dog, and I love walking around with my guide dog. He has four legs. I have two legs. So the two of us walking around together is like a 6 feet foxtrot.
Nice.
And so you have learned to dance, do the salsa, and to work a chainsaw, I read. Something I've never done. I'd be terrified. But I have developed a lot of systems as a blind person. You know, you have to survive by developing systems. So the title of your book, you know, Conquering Harvard Law School, how the heck did you do that? Talk us through the day by day. What were the systems that you created to be able to keep up with a workload that most human beings would fail?
So, context, before I conquered Harvard Law, Eric conquered Mount Everest, and that changed the landscape for a lot of blind people around the world. I actually had a journalist say to me, "Do you get sad by all the things you can't do?" And I asked the journalist, "What things? What can't I do?" And he said to me, "Well, obviously blind people can't climb Mount Everest." And I laughed. So any obstacles that we're put in, any obstacles put in front of blind people can be pushed aside through time, patience, skill, determination, and community effort. It's also the school's responsibility to remove those barriers. Harvard, early on in its history, denied access to women. Helen Keller wanted to go to Harvard, but they wouldn't admit her because back then they only admitted men. Over time, that community changed and opened its doors to women, people of color, and people with disabilities. So Harvard was finally ready in 2010 for a deafblind person. I went there. I did not know what the solutions would be. I did not know how to be a successful deafblind student. And Harvard didn't know how to provide access to a deafblind student. We engaged in an interactive process to figure out the solutions. Try one thing. If it doesn't work, try another thing until we had systems that worked. And I graduated in 2013.
You're a daughter of refugees. You're a Black woman. You're blind, deaf. You had every opportunity to tap out and say, this is too much. And then there are some people who just have a special thread count. And it sounds like you started early. I mean, you were mentioning being in, you know, elementary and middle school and advocating for yourself. At what point did it become, I think, what sounds to be like an absolute mission for you to take your story and your path and share it with the world?
So when I was in high school, I learned about a nonprofit organization called Build On that builds schools around the world. And I told my parents, I want to do this. I want to help build a school in Mali, West Africa. And my parents told me, no, it's too dangerous. You're not going. And I did the dishes. I did chores. I told them, I'm working really hard. I really want to make a difference, not just here at home, but around the world. And they said, no, it's dangerous. You're not allowed to go. They asked me, how are you going to build a school if you can't see? And I told them, with bricks, with shovels. The non-disabled students also don't know how to build a school. We'll learn together. My parents still said no. They did not believe that I understood my abilities because I was a disabled teenager. I thought maybe they would believe the message coming from a non-disabled adult. So I had the program manager sit down with my parents and talk to them, address all their concerns. Malaria, kidnapping, all these overblown, dramatic, imagined fears that technically, yes, could happen. But if we were to overwhelm ourselves with all the potential barriers in the world, we'd never leave our homes. Finally, after talking to the program manager, they agreed to let me go. I went to Mali, helped build a school, physically building the school, so shoveling, making bricks under the Saharan sun. When I came back, my parents had more respect for my abilities, just a little more. They're still worried. I'm still always going to be their kid.
Well, so you can go make an impact in Mali, but then one of the stories that really impacted me personally was you get into Harvard and you're in the cafeteria and you have like no way to know even like what you're eating. You bring it. I read that you bring it back to your table and that's when you discover what you're going to eat. So you're like, you don't even have a choice of what to eat, right? Like this power of choice, that was a very powerful part of your story. And what did you go about doing to change that?
It's a process. You know, at first I thought, who am I to demand access? There are lots of people struggling around the world. Lots of people don't have access to food around the world. Maybe I should just tolerate the situation. Maybe part of being disabled is accepting inferior service, and I just had to get used to it. I tolerated the situation at my college cafeteria for several months. It was a print menu for sighted students. Sighted students could read the options and then go to their station of choice. I asked the manager to provide a braille menu, post it online, email it to me. I have a system technology that allows me to use emails and websites. But the manager said, we're very busy. We have over 1,000 students and don't have time to do special things for students with special needs. Just to be clear, eating is not a special need. Everyone needs to eat. I was a vegetarian back then. It's hard to eat vegetarian when you don't know what the food choices are. And because I didn't have access to the menu, I waited stations, maybe sometimes 20 minutes because there were lines, get food, find the table, and only then discover what they were serving. I put up with that for several months. And then talking to friends and fellow advocates, I realized that's a choice. We choose to accept unfairness or advocate for justice. I did research, then went back to the manager and explained the Americans with Disabilities Act prohibits discrimination against students with disabilities. If you don't provide access to the menu, I'm going to take legal action. I had no idea how to do that. I was just 19. I couldn't afford a lawyer. Now I know there are nonprofit legal centers that help students with disabilities. But back then, I didn't know that. All I knew is I had to try. I had to do something. The next day, the manager apologized and promised to make the menus accessible. Life became delicious. I had access to the menus. And the next year, when there was a new blind student at the college, he had access to the menus too. And that taught me when I advocate, it helps all the students, all the people who come after me. That's when I decided to become an advocate for the disability community. And I looked into law schools, later went to law school, studied, and now I work as an advocate.
Well, yeah, don't mess with a future lawyer in the cafeteria is the lesson. And you talked about these technologies that people have created that haven't just helped disabled people, but they've helped the able-bodied world, right? They're applicable to everyone. They make life easier for everyone. You know, fields in astronomy and in the internet, and even like things like the typewriter. Talk about how that some of those accessibility solutions actually help the whole world.
Exactly. We call this the curb cut effect. We saw it with curb cuts. When cities installed curb cuts, it helped wheelchair users, but it also helped parents pushing strollers, kids with skateboards, the entire community benefited. We see this happening over and over again with accessibility features. It's called the curb cut effect. And if you post menus online where everyone can access them, life is easier for the students with special diets, who are vegetarian, vegan, people who want to know if their their food and dietary needs, their access needs, are going to be met. So it benefits the entire community when you implement accessibility features.
Is that what you mean when you have talked about the idea that disability spurs innovation?
Disability supports innovation, and it actually sparks innovation too. Throughout our history, we've seen many examples where disabled people spark the creation of technologies that benefit all of us. One of the fathers of the internet, Vint Cerf, he's deaf, hard of hearing. Before the internet existed as we know it today, deaf people struggled to communicate long distance. Vint Cerf developed one of the earliest email protocols. Through email, deaf people can communicate long distance. Guess who else can communicate long distance? Lots of people were benefiting from email, including hearing people. So when you do something based on disability, when you address a disability challenge, you could end up creating the next big thing, like email.
I think there's a lot of folks who feel quite confused or quite upset about the macro, the global energy right now. And everything I'm hearing you say is exactly what I feel like we all need to hear, which is you may not be able to change the world in one fell swoop, but your impact on your world, your universe in front of you has lasting effects. The things that Haben, you are doing and you have done in your life, you're impacting greatly one person at a time. And really, if you break it down fundamentally, that's all we can do, right? Do you have anything to say to that?
It's extremely frustrating that so many injustices still exist in our communities. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, that was a long time ago. And yet we still have so many injustices facing people of color. The ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, came out in 1990. And 30 years later, we still have widespread employment discrimination. We still have violence against people with disabilities, especially disabled people of color. We still have so many digital services that could be accessible, but companies choosing not to make them accessible. That gets frustrating. We have a legal system, but it is failing us. It's extremely slow to create change. And a lot of people feel that frustration.
So as a foundation, then, what does inclusion look like? You know, in general, but also for you personally. Because when people use the word inclusion, it's one of those words that, like, everyone has a different thought process and meaning behind it.
Yeah, I have noticed that for a lot of disabled people, inclusion is just about their own specific disability. We need to expand our awareness to include people who are different from ourselves, because that's what we ask non-disabled people. Think about people different from yourselves. Learn about all the different access barriers. Barriers impacting deaf people, blind people, individuals with mobility disabilities, individuals with psychiatric disabilities. We need to be thinking about all kinds of people who are different from ourselves. Address those barriers, remove those barriers, so our world can be more inclusive.
And you've worked, I think, a lot with folks
Eric,
who are...
What does inclusion mean to you?
Well, I think you're right. I think I probably see it and from my own perspective, right? Like with technology, you know, getting the technology to work. Like I feel like JAWS, which is my screen reader, it's always behind the ball, you know, it's always scrambling to keep up, you know, it's not like people think proactively about accessibility from the foundation, right? It's always a game of catch up. So yeah, I feel that for sure.
And I tell you, Robin, I've been with Eric a long time, and I've been all over the world in different countries that that are not as accessible, I guess, or less accessible than even here. And I've been very frustrated watching Eric get frustrated over the years, and trying to be his eyes. And I guess that. Then I would ask you, do you feel that that our country is handling accessibility on par with the rest of the world?
There are some things the U.S. does well compared to other countries, and some things we do a lot worse compared to other countries. In terms of the ADA and litigation-based advocacy, we do more than other countries. Part of that is because America's very litigious. But then in other countries, there's less police violence against the disabled. In Singapore, the metro is more accessible than any of the metro systems in the United States. Other places have better health care compared to the United States.
You know, I know there are frustrations and so forth that we've talked about, but anything fun, anything like in terms of what's your philosophy around humor? Like, I've washed dishes before with syrup, a bottle of syrup instead of soap. My wife started laughing. So what's your mindset around humor and sort of the crazy things that happen to us as folks with disabilities?
So whenever there is tension, humor, laughter is an opportunity to release the tension. I read your books, Eric. I remember that syrup story. It's excellent. Those bottles, soap bottles and syrup bottles, do feel similar. However, they smell different. So maybe going forward, you could sniff soap and syrup bottles before dumping them onto your plate.
Darn, I should have done that. Why didn't I think of that?
Little smart guy over there. You're going to learn a lot from hanging out with
I know. I should have used my nose. What a dope. Do you have a syrup story?
But yeah, humor is great. Me? So something different about me, I love having maple syrup in my coffee. How do you take your coffee?
With hazelnut creamer. And that's another thing Jeff makes fun of me because I'm not very manly. I don't drink it black.
I'm sitting right here with my almond vanilla creamer coffee as we speak. That is not one of my buttons that I do push, but we're synced up there for sure.
What you said earlier about people said, hey, you're better at that. Why don't you just go do it, right? Like in the kitchen. Do you think that that's one of the challenges of disability is that people are like, oh, let me do that for you because I'm a little better. I can do it faster, more efficiently. And then the blind person or the person with a disability gets sidelined, right? Where it's like learned helplessness. What's your advice for people with disabilities and parents to fight against that?
Yes, exactly. So if parents always do things for their kids with disabilities because the parents feel the parents would be faster and more efficient, then the child with a disability will never learn the strategies and techniques. For anyone, disabled or non-disabled, the first time you do something, you're going to be slower and clumsier at it. You get better at it and faster at it through practice. So disabled friends, disabled people need friends and family members who give us the space to learn and develop skills. That said, disabled people should also have the agency to decide, I would like assistance with this activity, and say, hey, can I have sighted assistance or, you know, mobility assistance? That's our choice. we as individuals can do a lot of work to remove barriers out of our way, but we also need communities, institutions like schools, employers, to also do the work to remove barriers out of our way.
So, Haben, your book has been recently released, and as we talked about, it's been promoted with the Oprah platform, and I'm excited to read it. But I mean, obviously, there's a lot of wonderful messaging and content to be in there. But I need to get confirmation that the audio version is your voice, because your voice is enchanting. And I need to know that if I have the option of reading or listening to your book, I'm going to listen to it just so I can hear you read it. Is this all accurate?
That's right. Originally, that was not the plan. Originally, they were going to have someone else read my book. And I said, no, this is my story. It needs to be in my voice.
Yes.
I advocated even in the process of creating my book. So I read it in Braille, and they recorded me reading the book out loud.
Wonderful. Wow. And that's why Haben went to Harvard Law School, and I barely graduated.
Yeah. I think we're understanding. It all becomes quite clear after talking to Haben. Amazing.
Haben, also, so last question from me.
I think it has more to do with not sniffing the maple syrup bottle.
Oh, man. Even Haben is jumping in on the bandwagon now.
You're a button pusher too, Haben.
You know, like one of the struggles I know specifically blind people have for a long time was like they couldn't get their textbooks in Braille, for instance. So, you know, you're getting your textbooks late. There was no law or anything that said you had to make textbooks accessible. I believe you've worked on some of that. But what is like the one thing or maybe a couple things that you really want to attack in society right now, 2020?
The main thing I want people to understand is disabled people are talented and competent. So many employers ignore us. We could have PhDs, master's degrees, and employers still assume we're incompetent. Mm. When I was in Alaska, the place where I was climbing icebergs, I applied for lots of different jobs and employers kept turning me down. I had an amazing resume. This was back when I was in college and I graduated high school valedictorian, great grades in college, volunteered, and that was all in my resume. And employers, as soon as they found out that I have a disability, would say, no, not a good fit, we're full, and all kinds of other excuses. I was applying for tactile jobs, dishwashing, folding laundries in hotels, baking cakes, physical things that I'd done because my parents made me do chores, which actually is not common for kids with disabilities. There are lots of parents who say, oh, no, you can't do chores. Don't worry about it. And they never end up building life skills. So I'm glad my parents made me do chores, but the employers assumed that I wouldn't be able to do these jobs and they wouldn't hire me. That was incredibly frustrating. It taught me that you can work really hard and society will still shut the door. Yeah. I eventually found an employer who believed disabled people are talented and decided to give me a chance. I was working at the front desk at a small gym in Juneau, Alaska. And one day at the gym, a woman came over to the front desk and told me, "A treadmill's not working." I followed her to the treadmill. I tried various buttons, the on buttons, other buttons on the machine, and it wasn't working. I put down my weight cane and I felt the machine from top to bottom. On the bottom, there was a switch. I flicked the switch and the machine went to life. The woman told me, "Oh my goodness, I didn't see that switch." I told her I didn't see it either. Disabled people are talented, so Sometimes non-visual techniques meet visual techniques. I want a future where disabled people are not underemployed, where we have equal employment opportunities. Mm. And all of us here listening can help make that happen. We can help remove the barriers and advocate so we have a more inclusive world.
I love that. I mean, that's another reason why we're here today, Haben, because this community of No Barriers comprises not just people with various challenges, but business leaders, people who are trying to grow organizations and enterprises. And so what I'm hearing you say is like, you got to give people a chance, right? Give them a chance to prove themselves, because otherwise it's a catch 22, right? Like if you don't have the chance to prove yourself, there's a door closed in your face before you even try. Well, then it's like mission impossible. When I climbed Everest, that was the way I kept thinking, you know, people were like, oh, you know, he's probably going to fail because he's blind. Well, no, I might have failed for a dozen reasons, right? I might have failed because I didn't train enough, or I didn't have a great team, or I didn't have the right skills and systems. You know, blindness wasn't maybe only in the top 10. It wasn't the number one reason factor for success or failure. So what I'm hearing you say is give, you know, there's a lot of people listening out there, right? You got to open doors.
Yeah, so we need people to change expectations about disability. Think of it as an opportunity to build up new skills, like your sense of smell. How's that going, Eric?
Well, I'm going to go smell my dishwashing soap right now and just make sure I've been washing dishes with syrup for the last year.
Oh my God, we're going to go. Haben and I are going to go on tour, on comedy tour together.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Eric Weinberg roast, No Barriers Summit roast.
Yeah.
Perfect. Nice.
She would fit in perfectly. Maybe we should. I know. Now I've got it. Haben, I feel like maybe you would make a good part of our climbing team. You've got the right, go get it, crush him attitude, and you're willing to give Eric some shit from time to time. So welcome to the team, Haben.
That would be a lot of fun. To Eric's credit, he has the humility and the personality of being down to earth and open to humor. No one should take themselves too seriously. I don't take myself too seriously. And that's part of being a good leader, being a good advocate. You need to be able to laugh at yourself.
Haben, that's wonderful. And thank you so much for being a part of our podcast and the summit. It's wonderful to have you as an advocate for so many people, you know, just busting open doors, sort of like, it's probably before your time, but there was this like Kool-Aid, giant Kool-Aid guy who used to break through doors. And I'm envisioning you being that Kool-Aid woman, just smashing down barriers in front of you. And so I appreciate all your work and thanks for being a part of this.
Yeah, you're obviously an asset and an ally to many people. I think there's a lot of folks who are, you know, clearly all the way back to your college experience, the second blind guy who went to the cafeteria. I mean, those little things that you're doing are big things and they multiply by an order of magnitude. And I commend you for all your effort and courage and your moxie in general.
Yeah. And everyone definitely go out and get Haben's book.
Can't wait to read it.
Haben, Deafblind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law School.
And I'm going to listen.
An amazing read.
Thank you both. Thank you, Eric and Jeff. This conversation is going to help a lot of people. Remember that advocacy is not just about ourselves, but impacts our entire community. And when we take the time to advocate, it makes life better for those who come after us. So here's to more advocacy, a more inclusive future, and more laughter and humor in our lives.
You're here. Well
yeah,
said.
Thank you.
All right. So Eric, amazing conversation with Haben. You know, I felt like I was watching you. I can see your video feed. And as you're listening to her, obviously I know your facial expressions, but it was a lot of what she was saying that I could tell really, really resonated with you. It was clear that a lot of her experiences as a young kid, it really, really hit you. So tell me how it made you feel and what you really took away.
I mean, how could I not resonate with all those stories of, you know, barriers, of course, societal barriers, societal ceilings, right? And then you're just this incredibly intense desire to break through those barriers. Haben not only breaking through those barriers for her own personal benefit, but for others, and not just people who are blind deaf, but for all kinds of challenges. That's what she was talking about at the end there. And so, this is to me a fascinating conversation about what advocacy means, what inclusion means, and also this broader community that, you know, of no barriers who are opening doors for people. I mean, including our incredible sponsors like Wells Fargo, who are actively looking to hire people with different kinds of challenges. So thus their participation in this event today.
One thing I realized from spending an hour talking to Haben is I wouldn't mess with her. That is a tough human being right there. You can tell that she is a she's got the warrior wiring, and that she will not play the role of the victim. She will stand up, and my guess, she will figuratively put it right back at you if you come with her.
Somebody put a bull penis in front of her and she was just ready to chop it up. Like, you're not going to freak me out. I'll cut that thing to pieces.
And I love it because her voice is so soft and soothing and peaceful, but you can tell she is the peaceful warrior, that has spent her life just, finding opportunities to say, no, this is not how we're going to do it, even though we've done it this way in the past. We're going to create a different system. We're going to innovate. We're going to create. We're going to mobilize. And we're going to find a different path. And Eric, you've done the same thing.
Thank you so much to the whole No Barriers community for listening. No Barriers to all.
See you next time. Thank you.
Production team behind this podcast includes senior producer Pauline Schaefer, executive producer Diedrich Jonk, sound design, editing, and mixing by Tyler Kottman, graphics by Sam Davis, and marketing support by Megan Lee and Carly Sandsmark. Special thanks to the Dan Ryan Band for our intro song, Guidance. And thanks to all of you for listening. We know that you've got a lot of choices about how you can spend your time, and we appreciate you spending it with us. If you enjoy this podcast, we encourage you to subscribe to it, share it, and give us a review. Show notes can be found at nobarrierspodcast.com. And soon they will be fighting and see the rain it catches up.